This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
A Vulcan Film Production. Executive Producers Seymour S. Dorner, Milton Subotsky. A Trans-Lux Release. Dennis Lotus, Christopher Lee, Betty St. John, Patricia Jessel in Horror Hotel. With narrative description by AudioVision Canada. With Valentine Dial, Norman McCowan, Anne Beach, Tom Naylor. Introducing Venetia Stevenson. Screenplay by George Baxt. Story by Milton Subotsky. Camera operator Jack Atchler. Assistant director Tom Pevsner. Sound mixer Richard Bird. Continuity Splinters Deeson. Special effects Cliff Richardson. Director of photography Desmond Dickinson. Art director John Bleasert. Editor John Pomeroy. Production manager Ben Arbide. Music composed and conducted by Douglas Gamley. Jazz by Ken Jones. Produced by Donald Taylor. Directed by John Moxia. In a mist-shrouded 17th-century colonial American town, logs burn in a fire basket. A village elder leads a group of men and women toward the fire basket. A man steps forward to meet the elder.
Bring out Elizabeth Selwyn.
The man strides toward a house nearby. The man enters the house, then returns holding a wild-eyed woman captive. When she stares scornfully at the angry mob, they cower fearfully.
Witch!
The woman spits at the mob. The captive woman's eyes fill with terror when she sees the heavy wooden stake driven into the ground nearby.
Burn the witch!
She calls to a tall man in the crowd.
Jethro Cain, hast thou consorted with the witch, Elizabeth Selwyn?
Jethro considers his answer.
No.
Burn the witch!
As Jethro looks on, downcast, the mob drags the woman toward the stake. The woman struggles in vain as her arms are bound with chains. Suddenly, the woman spots a villager holding a flaming firebrand.
No!
As he steps toward her, she writhes in terror, but her chains bind her tightly to the stake. Jethro watches from the edge of the mob.
Elizabeth Selwyn, on this third day of March, in the year of our Lord, 1692, we, the people of Whitewood, Massachusetts, condemn thee as a witch.
The elder grasps a burning firebrand.
May the flames cleanse thy soul of its evil, of its lust for blood, but may they bring about the death of Abigail Adams.
The elder sets fire to the pile of wood that encircles the stake. As the flames leap upward, the woman twists and turns in agony, trying to escape the searing heat. Jethro calls out,
"Help her!
When the woman gazes beseechingly toward the heavens, the area is plunged into darkness and the mob cringes fearfully.
I have made my pact with the Ulcibel. Hear me!
Centuries later.
Burn, witch, burn, witch, burn, burn, burn.
A professor gives a lecture.
So shouted the people of Whitewood when they burned Elizabeth Selwyn in 1692. Though, as I've said, little is known today of the actual practice of witchcraft in 17th century New England, superstition, fear, and jealousy drove the Puritans to accuse their friends and relatives of consorting with the devil. Raiding around huge bonfires, repeating vindictive chants, they consigned the poor creatures to the flames.
Nan Barlow, a pretty young woman, and Bill Maitland, her handsome boyfriend, listen.
Burn, witch, burn, witch, burn, burn, burn.
Dig that crazy bead.
Shh.
Bill wilts when the professor glowers at him.
That will be all for today. Tomorrow will be my concluding lecture on the history of witchcraft in 17th century New England. I shall bring along some illustrations, which I'm sure will interest you all.
I'll bring the matches.
The professor glares at Bill.
Maitland!
Since you chose to attend these lectures, I had hoped that it was in a spirit of scientific curiosity about the subject.
Nan looks at Bill reproachfully.
That'll be all.
Bill, how could you?
He takes it all so darn seriously. He's got you all hypnotized.
Oh, Miss Barlow.
Yes, Professor.
Can I see you for a moment, please?
What about our date?
I mean,
look, I'll wait for you outside.
As Bill leaves, Nan turns to the professor.
Yes, Professor.
Rather a difficult young man, that. I fear that you are more of an attraction to him than my poor efforts. However, I've been reading through your papers, Miss Barlow. They show a very sound appreciation of the subject.
I want to go to New England to do my senior paper.
Mm-hmm. You're really quite good, you know.
Bill waits impatiently in the hall outside the professor's study. Inside.
Some first-hand research. I want to get the atmosphere. Find out how widespread witchcraft really was. What the witches were really like.
That might take a little time, you know.
Well, I have the time. My brother and I were going to spend our vacation with our cousins. What I'd really like to do is to get a room in the smallest, oldest town in New England I can find. Check through all the town hall records. Recheck the libraries. Talk to the Puritan descendants. Make a really thorough investigation.
Your brother is a professor of science, Miss Barlow. I hardly think he'd be very interested in the history of witchcraft.
Then I'd go alone.
You don't think he'd object to that?
You leave Richard to me. He's picking me up here for lunch.
Dick Barlow enters the hall.
Hello, Bill. Professor Barlow. Nan here? Yeah, she's in there with him.
Dick looks at Bill quizzically.
Well, I don't like her getting mixed up in this witchcraft business.
Why not? It's only part of her history course.
Let's find out.
Professor Barlow.
Yeah?
Before you go in there, could I have a word with you?
Sure.
Well, it's about Nan and me.
Oh.
Inside.
If you're really serious about this, I happen to know of a town in New England. As a matter of fact, it's the identical place where the events occurred that I mentioned in today's lecture, Whitewood. It's quite a small place. It's a little bit off the beaten track, so maybe these directions will help you.
Thank you.
I think you might very well find what you're looking for there. I happen to know the woman who owns the inn at Whitewood. Her name is Newless, Mrs. Newless. So you just tell her I sent you.
Raven's Inn, Whitewood.
What's Whitewood?
When Dick enters, the professor frowns.
Now, Dick, don't be too upset, but I'm going to change my plans for the vacation.
Change your plans?
Yes. Going to a place called Whitewood for a week or so to do some research.
Who are you? What about Cousin Sue? Well, she's expecting you for a birthday party on the 17th. She'll never forget.
I can still easily make it by then. This is important. My term paper's got to be good. It could mean a scholarship.
Man, I've made all the arrangements.
Come on, Dick. You'll have a good time without me. My mind's made up. I'm going to Whitewood.
Surely any good encyclopedia will give you all the nonsense you want to know about witchcraft.
Witchcraft is not nonsense, Barlow.
I'm sorry, Driscoll.
Witchcraft
Like magic sorcery. To me, it's nothing but fairy tale mumbo jumbo. I'm a scientist, Driscoll. I believe what I can see, what I can feel and touch.
The basis of fairy tales is reality. The basis of reality is fairy tales.
Did you ever meet a witch, Driscoll?
The professor considers his answer.
Perhaps.
Oh, come on, you're an historian. No witch ever survived the burning at the stake for all their pacts with the devil.
In 1692, Elizabeth Selwyn went to the stake. She was buried in a churchyard in New England. And yet 3 years later...
Yeah?
3 years later, a new wave of blood sacrifices broke out in the village that had condemned her. The daughters of the elders who had condemned her were themselves found murdered with every last drop of blood drained from their bodies. And afterwards, people came forward to testify that they had actually seen Elizabeth Selwyn.
Oh, stop. This would be more effective at midnight with howling winds and crashing thunder, and even then it wouldn't frighten anyone.
Driscoll slams his book shut.
Dick, I'm sorry, Professor Driscoll.
That's all right, Miss Barlow. You won't be the first person to have scoffed at the subject.
Honey, when you get to, where is it?
Whitewood.
Ah, yes, Whitewood. Well, send me a picture postcard of a witch. If possible, autographed. Now, let's have some lunch, eh?
I'm sorry, I have a date.
Nan stalks out of the office. As Dick follows her, Driscoll stares after them intently. Afterward, at a soda counter...
Nan, darling, I still don't see why you have to go off to this Whitewood place. Now, I thought we were going to have some time together during this vacation.
You know I want to be with you. It's just this is important.
Look. What the heck can you find that hasn't been found before?
I don't know. It's just that maybe, hidden in some attic or buried in some old antique shop, there's something that might give a whole new outlook to the
subject.
Oh,
what new outlook can there be?
You're a science student, honey. You know how important research is.
But this isn't about anything real. This is just superstitious people burning silly old women.
But suppose the women weren't silly. Suppose they really had a pact with the devil. Pact that could have supernatural power.
Oh, come on. What kind of power?
I don't know.
Later, Dick and Bill meet in Dick's house.
Oh, look, it's no use, Bill. We've both tried our hardest to talk her out of going.
Do you really think she will find anything worthwhile?
Well, I think we have to respect her desire to find something new, even if we don't agree with the subject.
Agree with it? I've never heard so much nonsense as that guy Driscoll talks in all my life.
Well, here I am, all packed.
Oh, I suppose there's nothing I can say will stop you from going, huh? Yeah, well, I'll put this in the car.
Dick leaves the room with Nan's suitcase.
I still hope you'd change your mind, Nan.
Don't worry, darling. I'll be back as quick as I can, and I'll write.
Bill pouts.
Well... Don't forget me altogether, huh?
She kisses him on the nose.
I won't. Give Sue my love, and don't forget we have a date at our party.
Bye, darling.
When they kiss, she throws her arms around his neck. Soon after, Nan drives to Whitewood. At night, she stops at a gas station in a heavy mist. An attendant approaches the car.
Excuse me, can you help me? I seem to be lost.
Sure, if I can.
I'm looking for the Whampoa Road.
Whampoa Road? Hardly anyone uses that anymore.
Well, my friend gave me the directions. Take road 28A, turn onto the Whampoa Road, bear left at the fork through to Whitewood.
Whitewood?
Am I that far away?
No, ma'am, not far. Not many God-fearing folks visit Whitewood nowadays. If I were you, I'd...
If you'll excuse me, I'm in a hurry. Which way is it?
Well, follow this road about 2 miles. You come to a fork. There'll be a sign, Whampoa Road. Turn left, keep straight. There'll be Whitewood.
Thank you very much.
When Nan drives away, the attendant watches her go with a worried look. In the car, Nan follows the attendant's directions through the dense mist. Seeing a tall man by the road sign, Nan pulls over.
Ghostly tendrils of mist swirl around the man.
Does that sign say Wempart Road?
He looks like Jethro.
Wempart Road, yes.
Oh, good. I was afraid I missed it.
Is it Whitewood you seek?
Yes.
I, too. Would I be imposing if...
No, of course not. Get in.
Thank you.
They drive away.
I think the highway commissioner will do something about these roads. Watch out, here comes another bump.
What is your mission in Whitewood?
Mission? Well, I'm going there to do some research on witchcraft. Professor Driscoll gave us some very interesting lectures on the subject, and I'm going there to get some original source material. Do you know Whitewood?
I've known it for many years.
Do you go there often?
Fairly often.
Oh, then you must know the Raven's Inn.
I shall be resting there.
Oh, so shall I. Oh, my name's Nan Barlow.
My name's Jethro Keane.
Pleased to meet you.
Pleased to meet you.
Soon after, they arrive in Whitewood, where a mist swirls around the car up to its hubcaps. Nan stops to admire some buildings nearby.
Just like a picture out of a history book. I feel as though I were in the 17th century. Why hasn't Whitewood been written about?
It's off the beaten path. Few tourists come here. For Whitewood, time stands still.
Look at that church. Must have been beautiful. What a shame they let it get so run down.
Nan drives away slowly.
Straight on?
Yes, follow the road around.
Oh, there it is. What a lovely old building. 17th century, at least. How picturesque can you get? Right by the graveyard.
Yes, it has not been used for more than 200 years.
Any witches buried there?
There are indeed. All in a section of unconsecrated ground.
Spooky, isn't it? Well, keep your fingers crossed for me, Mr. Keane. I hope Mrs. Newells has that room.
Nan turns to look at Jethro, but he's vanished. She looks around the car, but he's nowhere in sight. Nan steps out of the car and walks toward the inn. Entering the lobby, she finds it deserted. But bathed in flickering light from a fire, burning in a fireplace beside the front desk. Nan sees a wall plaque, March 3rd, 1692. On this site was burned for witchcraft Elizabeth Selwyn. A hand touches Nan's shoulder. It's a girl, with frightened, troubled eyes.
Oh, I didn't hear you come in. Are you Mrs. Newless?
The girl shakes her head.
I'm Nan Barlow. I was told I might find a room here. I was recommended by a friend of mine, Professor Driscoll. Perhaps you know him.
That will be all, Lottie.
When an older woman appears on a staircase nearby, the girl scurries away.
I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Unfortunately, Lottie cannot talk. I've often told her not to answer
the woman bell. Looks like Elizabeth Selwyn.
Then you're Mrs. Newless.
I am. May I help you?
Yes, I'd like to have a room here for 2 weeks.
The hotel is quite full. Oh, the guests are never about at this time of the day.
Well, I'm a student of Professor Driscoll's. He told me if I mentioned his name, I'd have no trouble.
Well, there is a room I could let you have. It's just off the lobby.
Oh, thank you. Oh, Mrs. Newless, that plaque. Is it true that Elizabeth Selwyn was really burnt here for being a witch?
She was?
And do you believe she was a witch?
The woman smiles mysteriously.
Come along. I'll show you to your room. I hope you will be comfortable.
As Nan enters her room, Jethro appears in the lobby.
Yes, it is a nice room. The previous occupants have always found it most agreeable. Well, if there's anything you should need, just ring the bell for me at the desk.
Thank you.
On her way out, Mrs. Newlis closes the door behind her. Nan puts her suitcase on a blanket box at the foot of her bed. She pulls out a framed photo of Bill, which she puts under her pillow. Stumbling on a throw rug beside the bed, Nan finds it covers a trap door. She pokes and prods at the trap door, then recovers it with the rug. Meanwhile, in the lobby...
It's been so many months. I've counted the days to this holiday.
So have the others. It wasn't easy for some of my guests to get here. Many had to travel vast distances.
I was lucky. The last few miles were enchanting. Miss Barlow is very good company.
You must be tired, Jethro. Your room is ready.
And the festivities.
I am prepared.
Jethro withdraws as Nan enters the lobby.
Oh, Mrs. Newlis. I thought I'd have a short look around town. I won't be gone long.
I think you'll find the church interesting. Unfortunately, it no longer has a congregation.
Nan smiles at Mrs. Newlis on her way out. Jethro reappears.
He will be pleased.
Outside, Nan walks through the ground mist, which eddies around her knees. When she passes a couple, they stop and stare at her curiously. Ignoring them, Nan walks toward the church. Steps out of the mist and walks past Nan, who stops to read an old sign that advertises the times of services at Whitewood Church. When Nan tries to enter the church, an old reverend blocks her way.
I'm told this was once a house of worship.
It is still a house of worship. I am the reverend of this church. As long as the breath of life is within me, this house shall remain God's house.
Must have been a beautiful building.
For me, it is still beautiful.
I'm sorry. What a shame the people have let it fall into such a state.
Strangers rarely come to Whitewood. Who are you?
I'm Nan Barlow. I'm staying at the Raven's Inn.
Why have you come to Whitewood?
Well, because I'm interested in witchcraft.
Young woman, leave Whitewood. Leave Whitewood tonight. For 300 years, the devil has hovered over this city, made it his own. The people in it are his. Evil has triumphed over good here. Look at my church. I have no parish. No one worships here. His is the power.
What power?
Leave Whitewood. Leave Whitewood tonight. I beg of you.
What power?
Leave before it is too late.
The Reverend retreats into the church. Perplexed, Nan turns away and steps into the street. Two women in the street. They stop, then turn to gape at her. Looking back, Nan sees their cold, malevolent stares. A short distance away, the The old man and the couple are gaping, too. Nervous, Nan hurries toward the lighted windows of a nearby store. A sign advertises the Parish House, antiques and old books. Nan enters and finds a young woman inside.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Please excuse the mess. We haven't been open long.
You have some very interesting things here.
Yes, they belong to my grandmother. When she died, I came back to sort things out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then you don't live here?
No, my family lived here for generations, but I've just been back a few weeks. Would you like to have a look around?
Thank you. Oh, I didn't mean to frighten you when I came in. It's just that all the people I've met here have acted like I'm a person from another world.
They don't see many strangers here.
And I had the most, well, unusual experience with the Reverend. He barred my way from the church. And he talked to me about a curse. And he warned me to leave Whitewood. Can you explain that?
No, I can't.
Does he often act that way?
He's my grandfather.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. It's happened before with strangers. Oh, the lack of parishioners and loss of his sight has made him bitter and suspicious.
I'm afraid what with him and the town, I was very scared. When I saw your lights, I made a dash for them.
I'm glad you did.
Do you have any books or pamphlets on witchcraft? You do, don't you? A friend of mine.
Well, we have a collection gathering dust, but why on earth would you be interested in... Oh, I'm sorry. It's really none of my business.
No, that's all right. I'm studying it in college, and I've come here to write my term paper.
Well, just wait. I'll see what I can find.
As she walks off, Nan inspects an old painting that depicts a public witch burning outside the Raven's Inn.
That's Elizabeth Selwyn, burned as a witch, March 3rd, 1692.
Yes, I know. I saw the plaque in the lobby of the hotel.
You're staying at the Raven's Inn?
Yes. It was recommended to me by a friend of mine, Professor Driscoll.
Alan Driscoll?
Yes, do you know him?
No, but my grandfather speaks of him. His family come from here.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Here, I think this'll do for a start.
She hands Nan a thick book.
What a lovely locket. May I see it?
Nan shows it to her.
I believe it's quite old.
It is. You're very lucky.
I'm even more lucky to have found this. A treatise on devil worship in New England. This must be a very rare book. I'm afraid I couldn't afford to buy it.
You can borrow it, if you like.
Oh, could I? That would be wonderful. I promise I'll bring it back in a few days.
You're very welcome, Miss...
Barlow. Nan Barlow.
Nan Barlow.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
Nan steps toward the door. Later, in bed, Nan takes notes as she reads the book. Hearing something unusual, she cocks her head, trying to discover the source of the sound. Nan kneels on the floor, then pulls the rug away from the trap door. She presses her ear to the floorboards. Getting to her feet, she hurries out to the lobby.
Mrs. Newless? Mrs. Newless?
Yes, Miss Barlow?
I've heard some strange noises in my room.
Oh, possibly the water in the pipes. This is a very old inn.
No, it seemed to be coming from the cellar underneath.
I hardly think so, Miss Barlow. The cellars do not extend beneath your room.
Then why is there a trap door in the floor?
The ground was filled in many years ago to strengthen the foundations of the building.
But I'm sure
if you insist, I will come and see you.
They enter Nan's room together.
I don't hear anything.
But just a few minutes ago... Never mind, I'm sorry.
You're welcome. But you can see for yourself there is no ring in the trapdoor because there is no reason to lift it. There is nothing underneath but earth.
Mrs. Newless leaves. Later, in the fire's warm glow, couples dance in the lobby of the inn. The time is 11:26 p.m. Lottie crosses the lobby to Nan's room with an arm full of towels and knocks at the door.
Come in.
Lottie enters.
Oh, hello, Lottie. Come in. Oh, I don't need any more towels. I haven't used mine. They're quite clean.
As Lottie picks up Nan's pad and pencil, the door opens.
Lottie, I've told you before not to bother the guests.
Lottie scurries out of the room.
Miss Barlow, I thought you might care to join the others.
I will as soon as I finish my notes. I'll put some clothes on and join them.
A treatise on devil worship in New England. Well, do you find this interesting?
Why, it's fascinating. The things I've learnt. I bet you don't know the half of it. And you live right here on a spot where the witches were actually burnt. Listen to this. On Candlemas Eve, February 1st, in the year 1692, a coven of witches, a coven that's 13, some men, some women, whose power came from the devil, gathered beneath the Raven's Inn to perform a black mass in the honor of Lucifer. The witch, Elizabeth Selwyn, later to be burnt at the stake, marked a young girl for sacrifice by obtaining an object of value belonging to her with which to call her, and leaving in its place a dead bird and a sprig of woodbine. The witches sacrificed her on the altar and drank her blood at the hour of 13. What's the hour of 13?
Well, personally, I have never heard a clock strike more than 12. Now, how about joining the dancing?
In a little while, I promise. Oh, by the way, I seem to have misplaced my locket. I remember having it in my room, and now it's disappeared.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll ask Lottie.
Well, I'm not saying it was stolen. It's just, I remember having it on the dresser, and now it's gone. I would appreciate it.
Of course. I'll look into it immediately.
She leaves the room. Mrs. Mueller steps toward Lottie, who stands at the front desk.
Lottie, I have warned you too often about annoying our guests. If you disobey me again, I shall turn you out. And if I turn you out, there will be no place for you anywhere. You do understand, Lottie, don't you?
Mrs. Newless walks away from the frightened girl. In her room, Nan smiles when she hears the music in the lobby. She puts away her books and notes and steps to her door. Looking out, she watches the couples dancing. When Mrs. Newless looks at her, Nan smiles. Nan closes her door and removes her house coat, revealing her bustier and stockings. She takes a skirt and blouse from her cupboard. Nan steps into the skirt. Out in the lobby, the dancing continues. In her room, Nan steps to her jewelry box, hangs a medallion around her neck, and walks to the door. Stepping into the lobby, she sees that the dancers have vanished. Mrs. Newless stands by the front desk, reading the inn's register.
Ah, Miss Barlow. I'm afraid Lottie is nowhere to be found, but I will inquire about your locket first thing in the morning.
Oh, thank you. Where is everybody?
Most of the other guests have gone to services.
Services on the 1st of February?
Nan peers at a calendar on the wall.
Candlemas Eve. The night when the witches mock the rituals of the church.
Are you all right, Miss Barlow?
Yes, quite. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Miss Barlow.
As Nan returns to her room, Mrs. Newless studies the calendar with her cold, cruel eyes. In her room, Nan opens a dresser drawer. A dead bird lies inside.
Mrs. Newless!
Nan hurries to the door.
Mrs. Newless! Mrs. Newless!
The lobby is deserted. Nan jumps when a clock chimes a quarter to midnight. Nan finds a sprig of woodbine on her door. Entering her room, Nan strides toward the trap door. She pulls the rug aside, then pries at the door's keyhole. The window shade has snapped open. Dangling at the end of the shade's cord is a key. Nan studies the key, then takes it. Peering out her window, she observes a line of figures in hooded robes crossing the graveyard in a macabre procession. Returning to the trap door, Nan inserts the key in the lock. When she opens it, her flashlight reveals a cobwebbed staircase below. Hesitant, Nan crouches on the first step. Beyond the staircase, she creeps down the steps. At the bottom of the stairs, two hooded figures grab her, then hustle her along a passageway. A door is lowered behind the three. Nan is shoved along the passageway. Arriving in a candlelit crypt, Nan sees more robed figures standing around a sarcophagus. She tries to escape down the passageway, but her captors are too strong for her. They pull her back to the chamber, then hoist her on top of the sarcophagus and pin her down. Mrs. Newless stands beside the coffin, counting the clock chimes.
No! No, no, no!
Mrs. Newless raises a dagger.
Oh, no, no!
I am Elizabeth Selwyn.
No, no!
Lebanon.
No! Let go of me! Let go!
She plunges the blade down. Later, a knife cuts the cake at Sue's birthday party.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Susie. Happy birthday to you.
Dick and Sue step aside from the party crowd.
Mm. Yummy. Delicious.
Dick, have you got any idea what's happened to Nan?
I'm sure she'll show up. She's probably met a good-looking he-witch and is bringing him along to the party, only they broomstick blew a gasket.
Well, it's not like Nan to be late for anything. Aren't you a bit worried about her?
Oh, she'll be here. I'm sure she'll make it. Oh, it's probably here now.
Well, you answer the door, and I'm going to put a record on for some dancing.
All right.
Dick steps toward the door.
Hi, Dick.
Bill.
Well, what's the matter? You expecting somebody else?
Oh, yes, Nan. Look, come in, come in.
Well, Nan, didn't she hear you? We made a date to meet here before she left for Whitewood.
Well, she probably got held up. Look, look, give me your coat, huh?
Nan was never late for anything in her life.
Relax. Take it easy. Join the party. She'll be here.
Dick takes Bill's coat.
Dick. Dick, I haven't had a letter from Nan in over 2 weeks now.
She's probably been too busy working on her paper.
No, no. There's something wrong. I know it. Look, will you do something for me?
Hmm?
Ring up Whitewood, will you? Ask him if she's left.
You serious?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Lighting a cigarette, Dick steps to a phone, and Bill follows worriedly.
From a long distance, I'd like to speak with Miss Nan Barlow at the Raven's Inn, Whitewood. No, I don't know the phone number.
What? Didn't she give you the phone number?
Oh, I know, but that's my sister.
Puzzled, Dick replaces the receiver.
They say there's no such place as the Raven's Inn.
But that's crazy. She's staying there.
Dick dials the phone.
Give me the police.
At the Raven's Inn, Elizabeth Selwyn returns Nan's book to the shop owner.
She left in such a hurry, she must have forgotten to return it to you, Miss Russell.
She seems such a nice girl, too. Wouldn't have thought she was the sort who'd forget to return a book.
We cannot always judge by our first impressions, can we?
I'm not usually wrong about the people I lend my books to.
Well, perhaps you'll be more careful in future.
Thank you for letting me have it.
Remember me to your grandfather.
As Miss Russell steps to the door, Elizabeth doesn't see Lottie thrust something into her hand.
Lottie, get out of the way, you clumsy creature.
Lottie obeys, and Miss Russell leaves. Outside, Miss Russell encounters a man.
Can I help you?
Yes, we're from the sheriff's office. We had a call this evening. A missing persons report from some college kid named Nan Barlow. Party calling said that her last known whereabouts was the Raven's Inn.
And Barlow, that's strange. Yes, I met her.
When did you last see her?
About 2 weeks ago. She came to my shop and borrowed this book. It's quite valuable, and so not hearing from her, I decided to come and get it. Mrs. Newlis had it.
May I?
He examines the book.
A treatise on devil worship. I must put this in the report. Peculiar thing some of these college kids do nowadays. Well, thanks for your help. Come on, Charlie.
As the two men enter the inn, Miss Russell takes out the object Lottie gave her. It's Nan's locket. Extracting a piece of paper from the book, Miss Russell scans it. House. Bill awakens on a couch. He lurches across the room toward the phone.
Hello? Yeah?
Dick comes in.
It's police. Yeah? Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Well?
Police sent a car out to the Raven's Inn. And checked out 2 weeks ago.
I don't get it.
Well, neither do I.
Look, these are Nan's books and papers. Go through them. See if you can find anything which might give us a lead. I'm going to pay a visit to a colleague of mine.
As Dick leaves the room, Bill inspects Nan's papers. In Driscoll's study, the professor removes a pigeon from a cage. Driscoll wears a richly patterned ceremonial cape.
O Lord of Light, accept this sacrifice.
He plunges a dagger into the bird's breast. Hearing the buzzer, the professor hurriedly washes the blood from his hands in water that flows from the mouth of a gargoyle. Removing his cape and concealing his sacrifice behind a curtain, he strides toward a window. At the door, he looks back at the study to be sure nothing is out of place. Driscoll opens the front door.
Hi, Barlow.
May I come in?
Well, of course, please do. Can I take your coat?
I had to phone you last night, but I guess you weren't in.
No, I wasn't. Do you care to go in the study?
The two men enter the study.
Sit yourself down.
Thanks.
You take a drink?
Ryan soda.
Ice,
please.
Now what's on your mind?
Well, Nan's missing. And she has been since the day after she arrived at Whitewood.
Really? You quite sure?
That's what the police said.
And what are they doing about it?
Carry out a routine check? I don't suppose they can do much more until they've got something definite to go on.
Well, I would have thought there was a very great deal more they could do.
What? As far as they're concerned, she disappeared 2 weeks ago and no one in the village seems to know anything about it.
What do you come see me for?
I thought you might have some ideas. Why did you send her to Whitewood?
Because it was the best place for her research.
And you suggested she stay at the Raven's Inn.
Sure, it's the only inn there is.
With an unlisted phone number?
The inn has its own clientele, Barlow. It doesn't need to advertise.
How do you know it so well?
Because I was born in Whitewood.
I see. And you'd have every reason to believe she'd be perfectly safe in going there.
I have no reason to suppose that she wouldn't be. Nan struck me as being perfectly capable of taking care of herself.
I grant you that, but why hasn't she come back or let us know?
Look, Barlow, I can understand your anxiety, but I'm quite sure there's nothing for you to worry about. Nothing at all. She's probably got absorbed in the subjects and gone off someplace. I wish that all my class had her application.
Yeah, well, I'm going to find out where this application led her. I'm going to retrace every step Nan took. I'm either going to find Nan or know what happened to her.
Meanwhile, Bill contemplates a drawing in Nan's book that depicts hooded figures performing a human sacrifice. Back at Driscoll's.
I can't stop you from going.
No.
I'm not afraid.
Afraid? Why?
Well, if anything did happen to your sister and somebody else went along to try and find out about it.
Same thing might happen to them?
Possible.
You seem to think something happened to my sister then.
No, I just think you're jumping to conclusions, Barlow.
Maybe.
Driscoll opens the door and finds Miss Russell on the doorstep.
Professor Driscoll?
Yes.
I don't like to disturb you, but may I see you?
Well, of course. Please come in. Good luck in Whitewood.
Thanks.
Dick leaves.
I'm sorry, but did you say he was going to Whitewood?
Yes, he is.
Silly to be surprised, but I've just come from Whitewood.
Really? It's quite a coincidence. My own family happens to come from Whitewood. As a matter of fact, I was born there.
Yes, I know.
Please sit down.
Thank you.
Do you care for a drink?
No, thank you. I think you know my grandfather, the Reverend Russell.
Russell? Why, yes, of course I do. How long have you been living in Whitewood?
Since my grandmother died a few weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, now, how can I help you?
I've come about a pupil of yours, Barlow, Nan Barlow.
Yes?
She came to Whitewood 2 weeks ago. I met her and liked her, and she told me that she was a student in one of your classes, that you recommended that she stay at the Raven's Inn.
That's quite right, I did.
Well, that's what I've come to see you about. On the day after she arrived, she disappeared.
Oh?
Later, the police came asking questions. Her family were worried. I thought you might have their address.
And why do you want her family's address?
Because I have something of hers I want to return.
Well, you just leave it with me and I'll make sure they get it safely.
Well, I don't want to trouble you. If you just give me their address.
As you wish.
He writes on a pad of paper.
Her address is Dorchester Street. 225. She lives with her brother. As a matter of fact, he's a colleague of mine. You just met him. He's leaving when you arrived.
They stand.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got a lot of work to do. I'm rather a busy man at the moment.
Of course. Thank you for your help.
Not at all. I hope it achieves something.
He escorts her to the door.
Well, you will remember me to your grandfather, won't you?
Yes, of course. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Russell.
Driscoll ponders the implications of the visits. Later, Dick and Bill meet with Miss Russell.
Yeah, it's Nan's locket, all right.
As far as I know, it's unique. I gave it to her. Where did you get it?
The servant at the inn gave it to me. It was strange. I don't think she wanted Mrs. Newless to know I had it.
Mrs. Newless?
Well, she runs the inn.
Well, why did you come here, Miss Russell?
I found this.
She hands Dick the paper she found in the book.
Professor Driscoll's notepaper.
I found it in the pages of a book I lent your sister on her first evening in Whitewood. When she didn't return it, I went to the hotel.
What was the book?
An old book. Book about witchcraft.
Do you believe in it, Miss Russell?
I don't know. Sometimes I almost think I live with it.
Live with it?
It's an obsession of my grandfather's. Up till now, I didn't take him very seriously. He's an old man. Now I'm beginning to wonder if what he says isn't true.
What does he say?
That there's something evil about the village. That on certain nights, the inhabitants leave the streets, close their doors, and stay behind them. That on these nights, the dead come to life.
Nights like Candlemas Eve?
What do you know about Candlemas Eve?
It's in one of Nan's books.
Opening the book, Bill flips to the page that portrays the sacrifice and shows it to Dick.
I don't believe it. Things like this don't happen today.
In Whitewood, I wonder.
I'm going to Whitewood tomorrow after classes. I can give you a lift.
Thank you, but I must get back. I can't leave my grandfather alone. He's blind.
May I come and see you when I arrive? I'd like to have a talk with him.
Please do. It's the house next to the church. Goodbye.
Bye. I'll see you at the door.
While Bill shows Miss Russell out, Dick examines Nan's book. Later, Miss Russell drives to Whitewood. The road ahead is swathed in a heavy mist. A man at the roadside signals her to stop, and she slows to a halt. It's Jethro.
Would you be going to Whitewood?
Yes.
Would you take me along with you? It's a dark night for walking.
Miss Russell hesitates fearfully. But Jethro gets in beside her. The car pulls away.
You're the Reverend Russell's granddaughter, aren't you?
Yes, how did you know?
I know a great deal about Whitewood.
Have you ever been there?
None, then.
Never seen you.
To see me is a special privilege. It's reserved for a chosen few.
What does that mean?
We'll soon be at Whitewood now.
When they arrive in Whitewood, Miss Russell stops the car.
This is as far as I go. You will...
Jethro has vanished. Miss Russell ponders his disappearance, then steps out of the car. She hurries into her house. Later, at the inn...
She's pretty, too.
Yes, she is. Very pretty.
A living descendant of those who were cursed. It somehow seems to make it better.
It's midnight.
Another day.
And tomorrow.
Elizabeth smiles.
The witch's sabbath.
Meanwhile, as Driscoll watches from a window unseen, Dick gets into a car. Bill looks on nearby. When Dick pulls away, Bill gets into another car and follows him. Driscoll watches Bill drive off. Later, Dick drives along the road to Whitewood. With mist blanketing the road ahead, Dick stops at the gas station, and the attendant steps out to meet him.
Which way to Wamport Road?
Straight ahead. Walk in the road. You see a sign. Turn left. You heading for Whitewood?
I am. Many people head this way?
Not many.
Is this the only way in and out of the town?
In this direction, yep.
You wouldn't remember by any chance a pretty girl in a convertible about a month ago?
The Barlow girl. Read about her in the papers. Never seen her again. Told the police.
Thanks.
Dick drives on. Arriving at the signpost, Dick turns left. Soon after, Bill arrives at the gas station.
Owner, could you tell me the way to Whitewood, please?
Another one. Straight ahead. Fork in the road, you see a sign, Wamport Road. Turn left, takes you right in.
Well, thanks.
Let me warn you, young fella, they don't like strangers in Whitewood.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much.
Bill pulls out of the gas station, then drives on toward Whitewood. As Bill tries... tries to see the road through the fog, he glimpses an apparition of Elizabeth Selwyn burning at the stake. Hitting the brakes, he swerves off the road. The car hits a tree and catches fire. Bill struggles out of the wreckage. He takes a few steps, then passes out. Ahead, Dick arrives in Whitewood and pulls up to the Raven's Inn. Dick steps toward the inn, looks curiously at the stuffed raven perched on the sign by the door, then enters. Lottie is cleaning the entrance hall. Elizabeth stands at the front desk.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like a room, please.
The inn is closing.
Why? I'll only be here a few days.
But the inn is closing.
When?
In 2 days.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to stay until then.
If you insist.
She hands him a pen to sign the register.
Could I have the same room my sister had?
Lottie overhears this.
Yes, it's available.
Mrs. Newlis, you told the police that my sister checked out.
You are mistaken, Mr. Barlow. I told them that on the morning of February 2nd, I went to her room and found it empty, her bed not slept in, her luggage and car gone, and her bill unpaid.
Well, you can put the charges on mine. When was the last time you saw her?
On the evening of February 1st. It was shortly before midnight. She'd been in the lobby here dancing with some of the guests. She seemed to be enjoying herself.
Did any particular guest pay a special attention to her?
Not that I noticed. Your sister kept very much to herself.
You know why she came to Whitewood?
It is not my habit to inquire into people's private business.
Would the fact that she was investigating witchcraft have antagonized anyone in the village?
Hardly. There have been other students here, you know. Besides, your sister was a very agreeable and likable young woman.
Well, have you any idea where she might have gone?
None.
Thank you. Now, may I see the room?
As you wish. It is this way.
As they enter Nan's room, Jethro appears in the lobby and watches.
If you should need anything and I am not at the desk, you have only to ring the bell.
Thank you.
When she closes the door, Dick steps toward the window. Peering out, he sees the tumble-down headstones in the mist-shrouded graveyard. Later, Dick steps out of the inn and walks toward the church through a thick ground mist. A couple stops to stare at him as he approaches the church. Church, Reverend Russell emerges, holding a cane. Suddenly, the old Reverend steps back inside. Puzzled, Dick turns away. When Dick passes two women in the street, they stop to gawk at him. Looking back, Dick meets their malevolent stares. They're the same women who frightened Nan. A short distance away, the old man and the couple are also watching. Unconcerned, Dick walks toward Miss Russell's shop. He pauses to read the sign, then enters.
Hello.
I'm so glad you've come. I saw your car outside the Raven's Inn earlier. I wondered what had happened to you.
I've been talking with Mrs. Newlis, and then I took a walk around the village.
Find out anything?
Everyone here seems to be afraid of something.
And you don't think it's just my imagination?
I don't know. Who's to say where imagination ends and truth begins? It's nothing tangible. It's just the way they look at you.
I felt it, too.
May I see the book that Nan borrowed?
Yes. I put a marker between the pages where she must have stopped reading.
She hands him the book.
Just sit down and I'll tell my grandfather you're here.
Thank you.
Dick opens the book and studies it. In Dick's room at the inn, Lottie scrawls a warning on paper. The witches are here. Hearing a noise, she stops writing. Elizabeth and Jethro are descending the stairs to the lobby. When Elizabeth sees that the door to Dick's room is open, she turns to Jethro. Peering into the room, Elizabeth sees Lottie writing her message. As Elizabeth runs around the bed, Jethro grabs Lottie from behind. Elizabeth yanks the note away from the terrified girl.
I warned you, Lottie.
Elizabeth nods to Jethro, who seizes Lottie by the throat and strangles her with his powerful hands. In the shop, Dick closes the book and shakes his head worriedly. Reverend Russell enters the shop, cane in hand. As the old man steps toward Dick, his granddaughter closes the door behind him.
Grandfather, this is Mr. Barlow.
How do you do, sir?
God be with you.
Shall we sit where we'll be more comfortable?
They cross the room.
Here's your chair, Grandfather. You must be tired.
I am very tired. I have little strength left these days for the fight.
Won't you sit down? I'll make some coffee.
The fight against what, Mr. Russell?
Against the evil that besets this village. The people are creatures of the devil. They know no other god.
You mean they worship Satan here? Today?
Satanism was never stronger than at the present time. For 200 years, the people of Whitewood have carried out rituals that mock the church's teaching.
I find it very hard to believe, sir.
Do not doubt, my son. It is real enough. For years I struggled against the witches. Their master took away my sight.
Seems incredible.
I have tried to convince others. They too found it unbelievable. But I know these people have a pact with the devil to worship him and do his works. In return, he gives them eternal life.
Eternal life?
Aye. And to seal this bargain, they must sacrifice a young girl on two nights of the year.
When are these nights, sir?
Candlemas Eve and the Witch's Sabbath.
Candlemas Eve, that's February the 1st. And when is the Witch's Sabbath?
Tonight.
Now you know why I came to see you.
I had no idea it was so late. May I have a rain check on the coffee? I'd like to have a few words with Miss Newlis again.
Of course.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
I'll see you to the door.
God be with us.
Well, Miss Russell, do you think that Nan's disappearance is connected in some way with these witches' ceremonies?
Yes.
Well, I'd like to come back later, if I may.
Please do. And my name is Pat.
Well, mine's Richard.
I think I feel better now you're here.
Well, I'm going to stay until I find out what's happened to Nan.
Take care.
When she opens the door, Dick steps outside. Pat returns to her grandfather's side.
Now drink your coffee before it gets cold.
You must not see that young man again tonight.
Why not?
The devil comes in many disguises.
I'll get you a spoon.
She opens a drawer.
Father, there's a bird in the drawer. It's got an arrow through it.
Go and look on the front door.
Pat steps across the room. A leafy twig is affixed to the door.
A sprig of woodbine.
Shut the door. Shut the door, quick.
She obeys.
Father, what does it mean?
Now listen, my darling. This is their sign. The witch's sign.
What can we do?
We must leave here. Leave here immediately.
When Pat hurries outside, the Reverend follows and stands on the porch.
Stop the car.
She gets into the car. car refuses to start. Pat releases the hood latch, then gets out.
Something's wrong.
She opens the hood and looks inside.
It wrecked the car.
Barlow! Phone Barlow!
Pat runs to the house. Inside, she grabs the phone.
Hello? Hello? Hello, I want the Ravens in.
At the inn.
Yes, Mrs. Newless.
Dick steps into the lobby.
Mr. Barlow.
That for me?
Yes.
He steps toward her.
Hello?
Dick! Dick, I'm in terrible danger. We've got to leave Whitewood at once.
Danger? But from what?
We've got to leave...
Pat!
Dick, help me!
Patricia! Pat!
When Dick races out of the inn, Elizabeth smiles triumphantly. Dick hammers on the door at Pat's house. He breaks in and flips light switches, but the house remains in darkness.
Pat!
Dick searches frantically.
Patricia! Sir Russell, are you there?
When Dick opens a closet door, the Reverend slumps into his arms. Dick drags the old man to a chair.
What's happened, Mr. Russell?
The witches. The witches have Patricia. Destroy them.
Mr. Russell, how?
The shadow of the cross. To use the cross. I adjure thee, O creatures of salt, by the living God.
The old man expires.
Mr. Russell.
Dick races to the door. On the porch, a hand reaches for Dick's neck from behind.
Maitland! Maitland, what's happened?
Seeing that Bill is weak and badly hurt, Dick picks him up and carries him toward the inn. When Dick is halfway to the inn, the street lamps flicker out. Dick carries Bill to his car and helps him into the front seat. Dick opens the glove box and takes out a small pistol. Dick ducks for cover when he sees hooded figures entering a crypt in the graveyard. As the last one enters, he races to the crypt, but finds it locked.
Pat! Patricia!
Turning away from the door, he looks at a nearby headstone. Wiping its grimy surface, he reveals an inscription. Alan Driscoll burned as a witch. Dick runs out of the graveyard, then rushes to the inn. Inside, he hurries to the phone.
Oh. Hello, operator?
The line is dead. Dick steps toward his room. He enters and peers around, looking for the source of the chanting. Dick finds the trap door at the foot of the bed. He lifts the door and shines a flashlight down the staircase. From the top of the stairs, Dick probes the passage below with the flashlight. Dick arrives at the bottom of the steps, then ventures forward warily, gun at the ready. Dick arrives at a closed door. As he turns away, the door slides open. He steps into the passageway that lies beyond. The door slides closed behind him. He pushes on it, but it won't budge. So he walks along the passage. Dick steps on something. Shining his light on the ground, he sees Nan's medallion. He picks it up and examines it closely. He pockets it, then continues along the passageway, brushing some hanging chains out of his way. When a large spider dangles in his face, he swipes it out of his way, but drops the flashlight. Dick flicks his cigarette lighter and moves forward. He finds Lottie, her lifeless face frozen in a soundless scream. Her body slumps over. Dick continues along the passageway. Arriving at a door, he opens it and enters the crypt.
Pat!
Elizabeth menaces Pat with a dagger.
We've been waiting.
The door closes behind Dick.
Dick! These are the dead who killed Nan!
Barlow.
It's Driscoll, wearing a hooded robe. Dick fires at him, but the bullets have no effect. Grabs hold of Pat and shoves Elizabeth aside. As Pat and Dick race up a staircase, Elizabeth and Driscoll follow. Pat and Dick burst into the graveyard, but witches block their way.
Dick!
Raising their claw-like fingers, the witches close in. As Dick is overpowered, Pat is carried toward a sarcophagus. Witches pick her up and pin her down on top of the stone coffin. Elizabeth holds a dagger to Pat's throat, while Dick struggles against his captors, and the time on the church clock nears midnight. Dick breaks free and runs to help Pat, but is recaptured. Meanwhile, Bill tumbles out of Dick's car. Grimacing with pain, he drags himself toward the graveyard gates. Witches wait for the hour of 13 to strike. Pat is held captive beneath the dagger's blade. Dick sees that Bill has entered the graveyard.
Maitland! Get to a cross! A cross! Shadow of a cross!
Bill lurches toward a cross, then drapes himself over it, exhausted. Elizabeth throws her dagger, which hits Bill in the back. Bill sinks to the ground. As Pat struggles, the witches stare at her coldly. Meanwhile, beside the cross, Bill is still alive.
Dick, he's moving.
Bill clings to the cross for support as Dick struggles against his captors.
Lift the cross!
Gripping the cross, Bill slowly pulls himself to his feet.
Quick!
Elizabeth sends one of the witches to deal with Bill, then takes Driscoll's switchblade and holds it to Pat's neck. Carrying the cross in the moonlight, Bill faces the witch sent to kill him.
God.
When the shadow of the cross touches him, the witch bursts into flame and collapses.
Back from the cross! Come here, Bill! Get the shadow of him!
It comes nearer.
Bill staggers toward the witches.
Not fail. We must finish the sacrifice.
Elizabeth lunges forward, but Driscoll restrains her.
Wait! Wait for the hour of 13!
Holding the cross aloft, Bill draws closer, and another witch is set ablaze. The shadow of the cross is cast on the witches. One after another, they catch fire. Dick runs to Pat's side.
Pat, are you right?
I think so.
When Bill collapses, Dick and Pat rush to help him. Bill dies.
Get a scorter settled with Mrs. Newlis.
Dick and Pat run past blazing corpses to the Raven's Inn. When they enter, they see a hooded figure slumped behind the front desk.
You stay here.
Dick approaches cautiously. He pulls back the hood. Elizabeth Selwyn's charred corpse stares through lifeless eyes. On the wall above her is the plaque, March 3rd, 1692. On this site was burned for witchcraft Elizabeth Selwyn. The End. Made at Shepperton Studios, England. This described version of Horror Hotel was created by Audio Vision Canada. The narrative description was written by Peter Agnes, narrated by Elva May Hoover, and produced by Marco Sorin and Valerie Hunter. For information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audio Vision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Richard Barlow, Dennis Lotus, Alan Driscoll, Christopher Lee, Elizabeth Selwyn and Mrs. Newlis, Patricia Jessa, Bill Maitland, Tom Naylor, Patricia Russell, Betta St. John, Nan Barlow, Venetia Stevenson, Jethro Keane, Valentine Dial, Lottie, Anne Beach, Reverend Russell, Norman McCowan, The Elder, Fred Johnson, Garage Attendant, Johnny Dyrenforth, Sue, Maxine Holden, Policeman, William Abney.